I really do think, like, and I'm not saying this because I'm an attorney, I'm saying this because I'm a business owner. Being able to build a contract that has boundaries, that puts you in a position of respect, that honors how you and your team work best, is super important.
You're listening to Females Who Film, where we talk about all things video production, entrepreneurship, and being a woman in the creative industry.
If you've been looking for a community of women to learn from and lean on, look no further.
Be sure to follow us on Instagram and join the growing Females Who Film Facebook group,
your online resource for all things video production from beginner to expert.
All right, ladies, let's get rolling.
We have such an exciting episode for you guys today. There is so much value in this episode, so I highly suggest grabbing a notebook, a pencil, maybe a cold brew. Get ready to take some notes because we have Lauren Boyd on the show today. Lauren Boyd is an entrepreneur, attorney, podcast host, speaker, and proud mom who is dedicated to helping entrepreneurs gain confidence in their legal foundation. That's right. We're talking all things legal.
Oh, yeah.
Before venturing out on her own, Lauren was in a predicament many attorneys face. She worked in corporate law, climbing the ladder, negotiating more than $3 billion in international contracts, but she's found herself feeling uninspired and burned out. In 2018, Lauren started and scaled her boutique law firm, Guide My Business. Through Guide My Business, Lauren empowers entrepreneurs to build a strong foundation for their businesses through relationship-focused legal advice without relying on fear-based terms. Instead, Lauren comes from a place of empowerment and education. At the heart of all she does, Lauren is driven by her passion for helping entrepreneurs own their brand and their day. And above all of that, I feel like her most important job is that she is a new mom of little baby Sutton Quinn. And she's also joining us on the podcast today.
She's the cutest.
Yeah. So our
our youngest podcast guest so far.
So cute. And you'll get to hear her. She has a lot to say in this episode. So like we said, grab a notebook, grab a pencil. There's so much value. And be sure to stick around till the end of the episode for a very special challenge. Welcome, Lauren.
I'm so excited to be here. This is so fun.
And we're also joined by a very, very special guest. Do you want to tell us?
Definitely your youngest podcast guest. Sutton Quinn Boyd is in the house. She's playing with her silent toys. We will see how long this lasts.
She is so sweet. This is Lauren's daughter, who is 4 months.
4 months.
Oh, sweet baby. I can't wait. I hope she has a lot to say today.
We're going to teach her to have lots to say.
Yes.
We like strong women.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Thank you so much for being here, Lauren. To kick this off, can you go into your background a little bit and tell us about Guide My Business?
Absolutely. So as we talked about in the intro, I mean, really, I started my firm, to be honest, because I wanted to be a mom one day. And I was in corporate law and having the pressure to kind of climb this ladder. I looked up to the people ahead of me and I was like, I don't want anyone else's job. My parents were entrepreneurs. And so for me, I think it was not a matter of if, but when I was going to own my own business. But if you had told me it was going to be a law firm, I think I would have laughed. Like, I don't think that's what I thought it was going to be. I didn't actually apply to law school or know I wanted to be a lawyer until my senior year of college. I was a finance and entrepreneurship major, and that's what kind of sparked my interest. And I went and never went back. After I applied to law school, I really stuck to kind of the business world. I was in-house for several years, really loved it, but just knew, like, I started getting that tug on my heart that, like, it was time to do something different. And so I was dating my now husband, and I was like, so I think I'm going to quit my corporate law job and start my own law firm. Do you want to move in and help me pay the mortgage?
Yes, I love that.
So he did, and we're now married with a baby, obviously, and we are 4 years into the firm, and I've been building a team, and it's been incredible, and Sutton has a lot to say right now, if you can hear her in the background.
She's so sweet. She's just staring right at you. She's like, proud of
but
my mama.
But this is exactly, like, this moment, like, being able to text you guys and be like, hey, childcare fell through. Can I bring her? Is, like, exactly, like, why I want to do this. It's, like, going to make me tear up. Like, this is exactly why I made the decisions, did the tough, like, grind of starting your own business. Like, everyone thinks it's easy. I have friends now that are like, oh, that sounds so nice that you can just, like, decide when you work and, like, work part-time. I'm like, yeah, but it was hard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was a long journey to get there. I kind of love how you talk about empowering entrepreneurs to build a strong foundation for their business. Do you kind of want to speak on that? Because I think a lot of our listeners are just starting out in the industry, you know, whether they're independent contractors or starting their own, you know, film photography business. Do you want to kind of speak on that and just like what it means to build a strong foundation through legal?
Absolutely. So one of the most basic things that I hear people ask is like, do I really need an LLC? And 100% you need an LLC. It's a really wonderful way to create a separation between you as a person and your family and then create a business. I think there's kind of twofold, right? Of course, I like the legal side of reducing your liabilities. Think of them as like smaller buckets. You're putting the assets and liabilities of your business into this smaller bucket, this legal business entity. But I also like it because I really think that oftentimes it's really easy to treat our business like a lemonade stand. Like we go out there and we're like, I have a business. Okay, hire me. And I think that's a different mindset than putting a few of these things in place and really taking your business and your idea and your vision seriously. So I would say absolutely file for your LLC. Go get yourself a tax ID number, which is basically like your social security number for your business. You can get it for free on the IRS.gov website during business hours because the IRS knows how to make things complicated. Mm-hmm. But those are really wonderful foundational steps because even if you don't see the vision yet, you may hire employees later. You're going to want a business bank account to ensure that you are capturing all of those write-offs, all of the expenses, and you're going to want a place to deposit your first paycheck. So I would make sure that you have those most foundational items in place, and it's going to give you a really great place to scale from. And I think that that's something that we, when we're starting off, we're like afraid to make big moves, but I think some of the moves you want to make are the moves that are going to show that you're investing in your business so that you can take yourself seriously and so can others.
Can you just go into some of the mistakes like new entrepreneurs make, like right when they start their business? Like what are the most common mistakes people make?
I think one of the most common mistakes that people make is not starting a business entity and not starting a business bank account. One of my friends, my favorite story from them is they were so excited when they got their first paycheck. They were like, for their business, and it was like made out to the business, and they were all excited. And they go to the bank, and they're like, here's our first check, we're here to deposit this. And they're like, yeah, you can't deposit that. Like, why? Like, well, it says your business name on it, and you don't have a business bank account. Like, you can go back to the person, have them write you a different check, or you need to like wait and open a business bank account. And so they had to wait and open a business bank account. And they're like, it was like really like they were expecting this like big moment. But you forget that like people now see you as the entity. And if you don't have those foundational items, like I'm such a big proponent of like get the back end set up first. Mm-hmm. It's going to change. It is going to evolve over time. But to be really honest, having something to bring people through when you bring have your first client, having an idea of what that system is going to look like is a really great place to start.
That's so good. And that kind of brings up a good point. Like as you know, in this creative industry, there are a lot of freelance creatives, videographers, photographers. What is the difference between a freelance person, a freelancer, and someone that is, you know, running a business? Would you say
nothing.
There's, yeah. Ding, ding, ding.
It's mindset. It's 100% mindset. If you see yourself as a freelancer and just working for other people and not as your own business, you're going to be doing yourself a disservice. So if you're a freelancer, yes, you are an independent contractor, but businesses are independent contractors and you can be an independent contractor.
Yeah, I feel like we talk about this all the time. Like anytime I get that question, like, oh, how do I like invoice someone or how do I quote someone this? It's like getting that back end set up and getting like all of the legal side taken care of and your branding taken care of and all of your invoicing, like getting all of that set up before you even like start. It not only like protects you as a business, but also like you come off so much more professional to the client when you quote them with a professional invoice, you send a legit contract and you have everything set up. They can write a check to your actual business name, not just your name, and they're not just like Venmoing you or whatever. So not only does it set you up for success, but also just presents you in like a legitimate business way.
Yeah. And I feel like it'll even help kind of build confidence too, like in yourself and your craft and your services. I think that's really awesome.
I think that's a huge thing that people don't talk about enough, is that like half of the challenge is like seeing yourself as like worth the time, worth the effort, worth the price that you're going to charge. And I think when you set yourself up as a separate business entity, you're more willing to see that like you've made the investments. And to be honest, I think sometimes people have a hard time when they send a contract out, they see it as this like disruption to the relationship that they're building. But what if instead you saw it as a way to set really clear expectations, mm-hmm. and a foundational element of like building this relationship and standing behind what you said you were going to do, and also protecting yourself, like being willing to have a late payment section in there. We actually, I'm your guys' lawyer too, so I know what your contract says. And your contract actually has like a zero tolerance for abuse clause that says if you guys aren't treated with respect and a vendor, a guest of whatever shoot you're on, or, you know, the person who hired you, you know, abuses you or any of the people that you bring to the shoot to help you produce, that you actually can terminate the contract and walk away and not refund them their money. Because it's really important in this industry, I think, to maintain that level of respect. You guys are professionals. You need to be treated with respect. And you can't just be kind of disregarded or treated badly and expect to just kind of put up with it.
Yeah. And you hear so many horror stories with people in film, in photography, whatever it may be, about people taking, for example, like if you're a photographer, your images and putting crazy filters on them or face tuning them and then posting them and then tagging their photographer. Mm-hmm. Like that's not my work. But if that's not in their contract, mm-hmm. then these people get away with it. So it's really just like setting those boundaries and protecting yourself up front.
Yeah. And I love that. That's a really good, you know, piece to talk about, because I think oftentimes with photographers, videographers, a conversation that I'm having with them all the time is they are worried about those things. And so that what they've heard once was that they have to own the copyright, and that's the only way to protect themselves. And I actually respectfully disagree. I think if someone is hiring you, if a business is hiring you, or if I'm hiring you personally to shoot my wedding, it doesn't feel right to me to have you own the copyright to my images. That, like, to be honest, as a business, you need to own your own images and your own video that you're going to use and post. But there's a distinction there. There's a distinction of a level of respect for the edits that the professional makes and not making additional changes. There's a respect for giving them credit for being the videographer or photographer of the content. I think those are all separate pieces. And then also wanting to build your portfolio, you can have add that though they own the copyright, you have a license to use the content in your portfolio. So you can build your portfolio, you can be giving credit, your edits and your style, because it's an artistic, like a creative medium, can be respected, all while still allowing that person to own the copyright. And I think that that's something that people don't talk about enough. They think there's only one way to do it, and they get really nervous when a business pushes back. But to be honest, I represent a lot of businesses, and I tell all of them that if they're going to pay for content, I want them to own it. I don't need them to own all of the raw footage or raw photos. I want them to own the final content that they paid for the creative to create. But I also want them to respect the creative and the process.
Yeah, I love that. And that brings up kind of rewinding and taking us back a little bit. So for someone listening that is kind of just starting their own business, they got their LLC, bank account, all of that, I feel like the topic of contracts can be super intimidating. So what are the steps that someone can take to A, draft up or find some sort of legal to have for their business? Like, where does someone start with that?
There's a ton of templates out there. I'm going to be honest, like a template is a really great place to start for the DIY kind of like messy action side. But to be honest, you're not going to fully understand everything that's in there. And you're not going to know if something's missing. You're not going to be able to tailor it for your business and how you work best. But that's a great place to start. If you have to start somewhere, I'd rather you have a contract than not. So start with a template. And then from there, find a professional that you can reach out to and have them help you implement. What I like to say is we're often so scared to make these investments. We're not worried to make an investment in building a website or photos for our Instagram, but we're like really worried to make some of these background investments that can be so key. if you don't have a late payment clause in your contract or the ability to suspend services or walk off a shoot that you're disrespected at, those things can all cost you the amount of money that hiring a professional to build a contract would cost. Once, one thing could go wrong and cost you the same amount. So how much better would it be to prevent that from happening and understand what's in your contract, because you can ask a professional what those things mean. I really do think, like, and I'm not saying this because I'm an attorney, I'm saying this because I'm a business owner. Being able to build a contract that has boundaries, that puts you in a position of respect, that honors how you and your team work best, is super important. And I think it's something that, you know, we put off until we make money. But when you're out there, you know, in the world and you don't know who owns your intellectual property and all of, you know, that time and energy you're putting into serving your clients, like, I think that's a big detriment to your ability to scale.
Yeah, it's so good. That's so important. And I know, like Lauren mentioned, she is our lawyer for the Good Vibe Media. So we work a lot as I'm writing most of our contracts and dealing with that side of things. But what, I mean, I could tell you from my perspective some of the things that I find really important in our contract, but I'd love to hear like your top three things. But for me, I feel like us being able to use the client's videos for marketing. So whether we post that on Instagram or our Facebook to just show our work, I think that's huge. I think writing down the payment schedule. So like for our contracts, which is a huge topic I know in our Facebook group, is requiring a 50% deposit like as soon as they sign the contract. And then we don't require the other 50% until the videos have been delivered and approved and all of that. So once they're like happy with everything. And then I think third, just we list out like all the details of the shoot. So the place, the day, the time, the deliverables, how many people are going to be there shooting, like literally every detail of the shoot is listed. But from your perspective, obviously getting kind of more nitty gritty than that, what do you think is like top three most important things?
I think one of the things that's really easy to overlook is the description of the services. Because oftentimes we're just like providing videography services. Okay, great. What does that mean? Like, what do you have to deliver? And how do you know when scope creep exists? When they're asking you to do things that you didn't agree to that aren't part of the price that you quoted them. If you don't have details on exactly what you are there to deliver, you actually, sometimes you feel like, oh, well, if I'm more fluid, it'll be better for them or better for me. It's really not good for anyone. Ambiguity can cost everybody involved. And I think being more clear there so that you have the ability to say like anything that's out of scope, this is what's going to happen. You have the ability to charge hourly or, you know, to quote another package. That's really important. And I think something that people, you know, just gloss over like, oh, videography services, that's it. Okay. And I actually like having deliverables more clearly defined because then those final deliverables are what the is the IP, the intellectual property, the content that they own, as opposed to all the products of your services. All the products of your services includes all the raw video, all the raw footage, all everything. Do you want to give that away? Do you want to like deliver that? That doesn't make sense to me. What makes sense to me is like what they signed up for as far as the final content. So if you clearly define what the final content is, that's what they have ownership to. Not everything in the kitchen sink, you know, and I think that that's really important.
Yeah, that's so good. I feel like I'm just like want to take notes on this. I feel like there's so much value in this. One story that comes to mind is we had a client that we sent the contract to and they redlined a lot of it, like wanted to change all these things. And luckily we work with Lauren, so I was able to send her that and say, hey, you know, will you look this over? Are these changes okay? Because obviously I don't have the education to even know what half of our contract really means. So I think it's good that, you know, to have someone that you can ask, like, is this right? And in that case, like a lot of it, you were like, hell no, like we're not changing this.
I think sometimes you have to look at people's red lines and take it with a grain of salt. To be honest, I think people that read the contracts that you give them are a good business owner. They're someone who is intentional about the way they work. And oftentimes that can be a really good signal. So don't be offended because they send any feedback back. Mm-hmm. But think about what it is they're giving feedback on and proposing changes to. My favorite thing is like, why is someone trying to take out the late payment section? Do they plan on not paying you? Mm-hmm. Hi, that's a red flag. So things like that to me matter. If they're worried about confidentiality, that's okay. Mm-hmm. You can honor that, but have in there like when it's no longer confidential. As soon as they post it online, now it's no longer confidential and you should be able to use it in your portfolio. So if they're redlining that, if they're redlining the ability for you to use it in your portfolio, decide if that's worth it to you. Mm-hmm. All of these things are choices for you to kind of give in on. Another thing that I, you know, would kind of push back on is if they don't want to give you credit, why don't they want to give you credit for your work? You know, is that the type of entrepreneur that you want to work with? It may not be. And I think as business owners, we have to think very carefully about who we're aligning ourselves with. And sometimes it's really easy to just see the money. But I think more importantly is spending your time and energy with people that are aligned with the way you want to work, because that's where you're going to grow your referrals. That's how you're going to grow your business, is being aligned with businesses that, you know, honor creatives and see the value of your services.
Totally. It's so good. Do you want to shift gears and talk about trademarking a little bit? Because I feel like this is like your bread and butter.
So we have a few trademarks in the work for you guys. And I think it's something that people don't think of. It's really fun to pick your business name, and it's fun to find the Instagram handle and get the domain name. And then you're like, cool, I'm done. I've got the domain. I'm good. I'm fine. And really, we put so much time and energy these days into brand recognition, as you should. When people think of the Good Vibe Media, or the Good Vibe Studios, or Females Who Film, I want them to think of you, not someone who is also in your industry that maybe even did a slight variation or the same name. I don't want there to be the potential for your consumers to go someplace else. I want people to know what they're going to get and who they're going to be working with, and there's no confusion. That's the heart of why we do trademark, is to protect consumers. We think about it as in terms of us and us owning our brand. That's a big part of it. But at the heart of the reason that trademark exists is actually to protect consumers. So you're actually giving yourself the gift of, you know, protecting those and the brand recognition that you've developed. You're honoring kind of the investments. I mean, gosh, we all put so much time and effort into making sure people know our name. So why aren't we willing to take a few steps to own it? And I actually have a lot of people that say, you know, well, when's the right time? And the right time is early. Give yourself grace if you've had the business name for a while, because you can always go back. But I would rather, while you're going through the branding process and coming up with a name, have somebody working side by side with you so they can see if that name's even available. I would hate for you 5 years down the road, or I've had this happen to clients, you know, they're 2 years in and they've finally really started getting traction, and all of a sudden they get a cease and desist letter and there's nothing we can do about it because they unintentionally were using the exact same brand name in the same industry, and there's really no defense to it. So now they've got someone breathing down their neck and they have to rebrand, and it's not easy. So rather than endure the expense of rebranding and bringing people along with that journey, why don't we get a little intentional? And if you can't afford to do it at the beginning, do it, you know, as soon as possible, and find the value in kind of owning your brand, because at the end of the day, that's a big part of what we do. Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's so, so important too, like in the creative industry. Like I know for photographers and even, you know, videographers and whatnot, it's so easy to make your business name your name photography, your name videography, or whatever it may be, some variation of that. So I feel like that is so important. Like if you are, you know, using your name's Rachel, for example, your Rachel Lee Photography, I don't know, like I'm just putting things out there. Yeah.
You can't trademark that, right? Because like that's your name, and then the modifier is photography. Like that's merely descriptive. You can't trademark your name. So if you are Rachel Lee, photography,
yeah,
that's great.
That actually sounds really nice. I wonder if there's a Rachel Lee out there.
It has a beautiful ring to it.
Yeah.
You can't trademark that, and that's okay.
Okay.
So that's good to know. But the Good Vibe Media.
Yeah.
That is something that you want to have protected. Females Who Film, that's something you want to have protected because it's a brand name.
Yeah, that's a good distinction.
Yeah, so think about that. And I know a lot of creatives, they use their name, and there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah,
I was going to ask, do you have like an opinion on that? Because I've heard people say don't use your name in your business for X, Y reasons. Do you think it's a good thing, a bad thing? Does it matter?
To me, the legal sense, it doesn't matter. Of course, you can't own the intellectual property behind the business name. Mm-hmm. What I think matters to me is think about the exit strategy of the brand that you're developing. If you can never have other people under you, like when it's your name, I feel like there's no opportunity to really bring other people in on your vision. And I think that that's something that, you know, we don't think enough about when we start off as solos. But I very intentionally did not want my law firm name to be my last name. Mm-hmm. A, my last name's changed since then.
Yeah.
But B, I wanted it to have a different feel. So I think it's about feel. It's about kind of the business that you're creating. If you ever plan to exit or sell your IP, you're going to want to have that distinction.
That's like a really good thing to note about trademarking your name, though. So what happens... like, could someone lose the rights to their name if their business is their name?
100%. So unfortunately, I don't know if you've been following some of these stories, but it's happened with Erin Condren. It's happened with Haley Page as well. And it's really sad because when your brand is your name and they become synonymous, it's almost like your name takes on a different spin, a different level of, you know, identity. It's like a separate identity from yourself. And unfortunately, in those situations, it depends on the business structure and how they're structured, what amount of control they've given away to other equity owners in the business. And also in the sense of Haley Page, hers has to do centered around an employment agreement and her assigning away a certain amount of intellectual property. And so I think oftentimes in the operation agreement, which is what you have with LLC partners, in stock purchase agreements, in employment agreements, people really often overlook intellectual property because they just assume that it's maybe their work product. But sometimes it can be things like your name.
That's so
crazy. I mean, can you imagine not being able to use your own name, going forward for another business venture? Like, oh, sorry, no, can't do that anymore. That would just be wild.
Yeah, I feel like that would be probably a really hard situation to move on from.
And I think that highlights the value of having someone help you review your contracts before you sign them.
Totally.
Unfortunately, I deal with that all the time. Like, people come to me like, I signed this. Now I'm having this problem. Like, now what? And if they had someone who could give them some good advice at the beginning, they wouldn't have signed it the way that it was at. And they would have made some changes that would have protected them because maybe they had one understanding it was sold to them in a certain way, but that's not actually what it was. And so I think, you know, as creatives, especially, or when you're using your name in your business, those things, it matters. That little extra due diligence is going to protect you in the long run.
Yeah, that's a good thing to know about trademarks. I also was wondering, do you have any like cautions for anyone who is writing up their own contracts or writing up from like a template or writing up like a talent release form? Like, is there anything people should know before they do it themselves?
That's kind of a hard question to answer because obviously each of us have strengths in different areas. So you might be a great writer. I think one thing that people don't pay attention to is in contracts, often there's what we call defined terms. That's the terms that are capitalized. Like the event, an event is capitalized. That's called a defined term. And that's referring to the definition of event, which should have been occurred kind of earlier in the contract. It allows you to consistently refer to things like the parties in the agreement. You use it for events, services, intellectual property references, deliverables. Because in this way, every time, instead of listing the deliverables again, you just say deliverables. But it's a defined term because it's capitalized. Those are kind of the nuances that I think most of the times people don't think of that are really easy to kind of miss, but actually have a ton of meaning.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd pay really special attention to, you know, some of those, because when you describe deliverables once, I want it to be consistent throughout. Consistency is a really big piece because there's kind of this theory of thought that there's an implied meaning when you refer to something one way, one time, and then differently another. Even though you think that they're similar, there's really an implied meaning behind well, why did you leave off that one word or that one piece of it? Is it because that part doesn't apply here? So you might think it's just like an easy little typo or error, but sometimes it can really kind of bite you on the back end.
So paying attention to the details. And
that's good for all things.
Yeah, that is good for all things.
So if someone's listening to this and realizing that they need help from an attorney, like what are some things that they should look out for when trying to find someone to work with?
I think find someone that's already worked in this creative industry, because, you know, it's too often that, you know, the legal field is a long standing kind of traditional field, and maybe not every lawyer has worked with a creative before, and they don't understand the nuances of allowing you to build your portfolio, the deliverables, honoring your boundaries and timeline so that, you know, you can work the best way that you want to work. So find someone that's worked with creatives in the past, and don't be afraid to feel like you're interviewing them. Mm-hmm. Ask what they've worked on them in the past. Have they worked with a videographer before? Because working with somebody who goes on to a shoot, who has an opportunity cost associated with their time and cancellations, all of that makes a huge difference.
So true.
So much value.
I know.
I'm like, I feel like this is a good note-taking podcast. Like, write down some of these notes.
Also, like, if you're going to invest in anything in your business, like, taking care of the back end and, like, bringing in professionals is, like, one of the most important
things. So good. Especially, like you were saying, like, if it can save you just one time, you know, save you that money or whatever, like, that's just so important.
It's worth it, yeah.
And it's one of those one-time investments too. You know, your contract will evolve and grow over time as your business does, and you'll make you will make minor tweaks. But once you have a good service agreement, you're going to use it time and time again. If you ever need to hire independent contractors, you're going to have one good independent contractor agreement. You're going to use it time and time again. Mm-hmm. These things will last. And I think that that's worth saying too, is that, you know, it's not going to be an investment that you're like have to just keep reinvesting in. Mm-hmm. You'll be able to make small tweaks. And thanks for rolling with the punches of a fussy baby, guys.
Oh, we love
this
her
is
so
what it
much.
Means to be a, you know, entrepreneurial
yes,
mama.
Yes, I love it. Yeah, and speak on that a little bit, because I think I know our audience. I think there's a wide range of ages, and you know, there's some are moms, some aren't, some maybe want to be moms. Like, speak on that of being an entrepreneur and running your own business and being a new mom.
It's the most difficult, best thing I've ever done. I mean, this is literally the reason I started my business, was like the intention of someday that this is what I wanted life to look like. So I think investing in kind of that long-term vision and start building it is really important. Mm-hmm. But know that it's hard. And it's hard, too, to have people in your world that don't kind of understand the juggle and the balance. And, you know, I'll be honest, like, it's hard for me to figure out what I want to do for childcare. Because I have flexibility, I almost feel more guilt mm-hmm. in asking for help. Mm-hmm. Because I almost feel like I should be able to do it all. And recognizing that you can't, and asking for help, and texting and asking if you can bring your kid along to a podcast recording.
We will always say yes, literally always.
Like, those things matter. And I feel like, you know, if anything came from, you know, 2020, it was realizing that we're all human, mm-hmm. realizing that, you know, we all have lives outside of work, and being able to be a little bit more authentic in that way, and, you know, and just know that this is part of life. Yep. And to be honest, like, she's my priority. Work comes second. Mm-hmm. But how do you do that in a way that your work product is still outstanding and you feel good about delivering the work product that you're delivering, but also that, like, you can, you know, find those boundaries and that balance, so-called, that we're all looking for.
Totally.
So good. I love that. Thank you so much, Lauren. Mm. Before we go, is there anything else you want to share, plug? I know you have a special podcast dropping soon.
Yeah, I'm actually recording with you guys.
Hey-o.
So we are doing a little bit of a rebrand. Currently, the podcast is The Lauren Boyd Show. And I'll be honest, like, just like any part of your business, you have to be willing to evolve over time. Mm-hmm. My podcast is now coming on to its third name, but I feel like I'm like seeing the vision. I think at every stage I've loved the podcast, but I've allowed, you know, the podcast to grow and change with me. And I've really kind of found my groove. It's a big mix of, you know, kind of that entrepreneurial perspective, but also kind of infusing that legal piece in there. And I've just been trying to, you know, really find, like, what value I can add. So we are in the process of rebranding it. But I guess the best place is just to look for updates and really cute baby pictures is my Instagram at the Lauren Boyd. And then if these, you know, these legal topics, of course, I think we only scratch the surface, you know, but I think there's value in scratching the surface, right? We're kind of giving you those things to think about, like what are those red flags you should be looking for and, you know, what's going to jog your memory when this situation happens to you. We have an Instagram page at Guide My Business, and twice a week we're putting out content. Oftentimes it's from our podcast. So if you want to dig into some more legal topics, go ahead. We have over 100 episodes.
So good. Yeah.
Listen to some of those episodes. There's a lot of things on different points, but a lot of that content is honestly repurposed onto our Instagram to be bite-sized legal topics. So follow along there and see what you can learn. And, you know, don't be afraid to ask for help and don't be afraid to advocate for yourself and your business.
So good.
Love that.
On that note, Sutton, any last remarks?
Oh, now you're quiet.
Well, we definitely have to post a behind the scenes photo of this because she's just so cute.
Sweet angel.
She is. Well, thank you so much, Lauren. It was so good talking. I feel like we could do like 10 more podcasts, which maybe we will do more in
Bring
the future about, yeah, if there's any specific topics that people are really interested in. But I just feel like there's so much value in this. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Yep. All right. We'll take a quick break. All right, we are back for another Q&A segment. This is actually a really good topic. I'm excited to talk to you about today, Chloe, because I know you have a lot to say about this topic. So
I always do.
Sydney from New Mexico sent us an email. First of all, thank you so much, Sydney, for reaching out. It means a lot getting your guys' questions in our DMs, emails, the Facebook group, all the things. It's really cool to see kind of all these messages coming in, and we really appreciate it. But Sydney says, I'm a senior in high school, and I know I want to go to school for something in the creative industry. I love all things film and design, but I'm struggling on which program to pick. Please help. Such a good topic. I'm just gonna let you run with this one, girl. It's all you.
Ugh. Well, I feel like everyone who is interested in film, photography, graphic design, whatever it is in high school, they're like, do I go to film school? Do I not? Do I do something more broad? Because I'm not like totally married to this yet. And obviously it all depends on the person, but I had the same predicament. I knew I wanted to be in film and wanted to do film school, but I couldn't decide if I want to go to like a fully fine art school or have that like college experience with like the other general classes and electives and, you know, social life that goes along with that. So I chose to go to film school at a state school, Arizona State. But I was highly considering NYU and Chapman. But the reason I did that is I kind of wanted a mix of the both. So I had like my small cohort of film kids and we did a bunch of projects together, like super hands-on stuff, which if that's something you're interested in, then consider film school. But I also had like the sorority and the this and the that and all the things that come with like a big traditional college. So if something like a fine arts program interests you, then I would consider going to one of those like highly rated film programs. And maybe a smaller college where that's really a heavy focus. But if you kind of want to do something more broad, then maybe it is majoring in something more broad, like business or marketing, something that you're also interested in, and then minoring in film, taking a few film classes in the beginning, and you can always change sophomore, junior year. But if you're uncertain, I would pick something more general, and then you can hone in on what you really like once you figure it out. I don't think anyone in a college has it figured out. Like everyone's like, why am I majoring in this or that? Like junior year, people literally switch their majors. Like
even after college, you're like, what just happened?
And like, do people, like half the people don't even use the thing they majored in. I was friends with a ton of people in Atlanta when I worked there that none of them had gone to film school. My friend had majored in history, but like they ended up on a film set anyway. So something you really gain though from film school is that hands-on experience, depending on the school you go to, obviously, but like the collaboration, if you're in California, the networking and the connections to the actual, you know, industry. But I don't think it's necessary. You can learn so much online on YouTube, in master classes. Like you can pick your specific thing and run with that, whereas film school is going to be like you'll do a little production, you'll do a little, you know, directing, you might do some take an editing class or something. You know, it's going to kind of cover all aspects, at least mine did, and then I honed in on my specific thing later. But I don't know if that answers the question at all.
No, I think that's so good. And I think the other thing to remember is, and this may be controversial to say, but some people don't even need to go to school, you know? No. Like, I feel like there's so much you can do nowadays where a college degree is not required. Or if you go to college, like Chloe was saying, I really liked how you talked about going for something more broad, like business marketing. In my case, it was tourism development and management.
Yeah, look at you now. Not using that.
Not using that at all. Sorry to ASU and my parents. No, I'm kidding. But yeah, it's... I think that it's important to remember that school isn't for everyone, and yeah. You can still have a really successful career without having a degree in something. And especially the world we live in now is so, I mean, there's so much content out there for you to learn online. And yeah, I think that, you know, if you are someone like that who wants to learn online and kind of teach themselves, but obviously wants to be part of a community, like that's what Females Who Film is here for too, is mm-hmm. kind of helping you still have that community aspect while you learn and grow. But, you know, if you're not getting that in school or whatever. Or if you are getting that in school, but you just want something with a badass group of girls, yep. Here we are.
There's so many avenues you could go, and it may change as you go too, and that's okay. But let me just say this, even though I have one, film degrees, like, don't really mean shit.
Yeah, seriously.
Like, I had a great experience, learned so much, made so many connections that gave me jobs later through the film world. So that's something, you know, to note. But... you don't, writing your, like, that you got a, or you majored in film production and putting that on your resume, like, that's not going to get you jobs. It's experience. So I, after my freshman year, I worked in Atlanta on a film set for 20th Century Fox, like I've told on this podcast before. And everyone was like, drop out of school, just stay and work. And I was like, what? Don't get a degree? People do that? Yeah. It's like, no, I'm going to go finish school, which I'm glad I did, but it's not really necessary. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, do what works for you. If you like school and want to continue your education and learn about, you know, do something more general or go to film school, it's all you. But if you don't like school and it's not really your forte, then like, that's a big fat waste of money, in my opinion.
Yeah, exactly. And you can invest that money in so much, so many other things,
Especially if you know exactly what you want to do, and then you could just put all your eggs in that learning basket. Like if you just want to be a DP, like, just, you know, pick that track and run with it, and you can do that through online courses or real set experience. Exactly. Jobs,
yeah,
you learn everything from jobs.
I know, so much. I feel like I've learned so much since, I mean, sometimes I think back and I can't even remember what I learned in college. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I feel like most of my like experience just as a professional too, like not even film related, it's just been working. So yeah. That is such a good answer. Thank you, Chloe. I love talking about this. I feel like this is such a good topic that you're passionate about. Maybe that's something we can dive into too, like on a whole episode, because I feel like there's so much we could talk about in the realm of film school, no film school, etc. So thank you so much, Sydney, for writing in. If you do have a question, Sydney, for us, like we always say, it does not have to deal with the episode. Obviously, this was kind of unrelated to our topic with Lauren today, but feel free to write in. You can email us podcast@femaleswhofilm.com. Please join the Facebook group. You can click the link in our show notes. There's been so much traction, and I think I said this a couple weeks ago, but it's been cool to kind of see people posting job opportunities. That's, yeah, like,
speaking of jobs.
Yeah, seriously. It's so fun to see kind of people from all over talking about that. So
yeah,
you can DM us on Instagram. Pretty much any way you can contact us, do it. We will answer your question on the show. And this will leave us with our weekly tip/challenge, which... Ooh.
What's the challenge?
Deals right with the podcast today. The challenge today is to go and set up your own contract template. I feel like this is so, so important. I mean, obviously, Lauren talked so much about this. And, you know, if you are just starting out and you don't have the ability to invest in an attorney or someone to kind of help you with this, there are so many resources out there for you online. So I would just search a few. Find one that makes sense for you and your business and plug away. Plug in all your info. You can brand it, make it pretty, yeah, so it matches your branding. But just make sure, I mean, this is a challenge and a tip, but make sure that you're protecting yourself and your business and, I mean, everything from your, yeah, equipment to your personal liability, all of that stuff. So just make sure all of those things are noted in there.
But yeah, post on the Facebook group.
Yep.
Let us know if you completed the challenge, and we'll see you there.
Yeah, we can't wait to. We have some very special things to be sharing with you guys soon. I feel like we say that every week, but it's like as you know, if you listened to our episode last week, we're also in the middle of opening a brand new studio space. Yeah. So things have been a little wild on our end here, but we have a lot of really cool shit coming your guys' way. And actually, we spent most of the day today getting content for that really cool shit, and it's going to be dropping to you soon. So honestly, we probably will drop to our Facebook group first, because those are the VIPs. Yeah. So if you're not in our Facebook group, please join us. Click the link, like we said. Obviously, like we always say at the end of episodes, rate, subscribe, share this podcast with a friend. Mm-hmm. It's been really awesome seeing everybody join in and whatnot. So,
yeah.
On that note,
see ya.
See you next Wednesday, peeps.